This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
Life sustains itself by cell division. So does cancer. Breast cancer cells multiply faster because of CDK4/6 proteins. But what if we could block those proteins and stop runaway cell division? To that end, Dana-Farber scientists laid the foundation for CDK4/6 inhibitors, new drugs that are increasing the survival rate for many advanced breast cancers. Dana-Farber's momentum of discovery keeps finding new ways to outmaneuver cancer. Learn more at danafarber.org/everywhere.
You thought we live in turbulent times, but tell that to the stock market. From Marketplace in New York, I'm David Brancaccio. While everyone's watching healthcare at a different address in Washington, D.C. today, a group of officials are debating the other issue that affects every woman, man, and child in America, the cost of borrowing. The Federal Reserve wraps up its policy meeting today. While they're not hiking interest rates today by virtually all accounts, we may get a new readout on the economy. Marketplace's Jed Kim has more.
One of the Fed's mandates is to keep prices stable. That means keeping inflation from running rampant. Raising interest rates can help. As the economy's grown and unemployment's fallen, there's been speculation that inflation could take off. Austin Goolsbee is an economist at the University of Chicago. He says that speculation's getting old.
Isn't that the same thing you said 7 years ago, 6 years ago, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1?
Goolsbee says growth has been okay, but not enough to make inflation spike. Michael Pierce is with Capital Economics. He says even if inflation doesn't increase, other factors could warrant an interest rate hike.
If unemployment continues to fall below 4%, as many surveys suggest that it will, then I think the Fed will want to raise interest rates even before it sees a pickup in inflation.
Because low unemployment means you need higher wages to attract workers, and higher wages are one precursor to inflation. I'm Jed Kim for Marketplace.
Checking markets, crude oil's up another 0.7% this morning after its big 3% run-up yesterday. It's at $48.21 a barrel. The FTSE index in London is up 0.5%. Dow and S&P futures are up by less than 0.1%, plus 20 points for the Dow future. There was a long stretch in the 1990s when I would come on the radio and mention a Dow or NASDAQ swing of, say, 1.5% as if it were as routine as traffic on the 405 or into the Lincoln Tunnel. These days, if you listen to the numbers, it's just 0.1% down one day, 0.3% up the next. Yesterday, the NASDAQ closed up a point, a swing of 0.2%. Now, there's a gauge investors like to watch that measures volatility. It's called the VIX, put together by the Chicago Board Options Exchange. Now, according to the VIX, yesterday was the least volatile day on record. For context, I want to turn to Ben Carlson, Director of Institutional Asset Management at Ritholtz Wealth Management. He's also a columnist for Bloomberg. Good to talk to you.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
I wouldn't say I'm nostalgic for the roller coaster ride on markets, but just kind of curious here, where do you think the volatility went?
It's really hard to gauge what exactly causes these things, but I think something that a lot of people don't consider is that there's a lot of quantitatively driven investors out there these days. There's a lot more information, and so I think the fact that investors are more well-informed is actually having an impact on market volatility.
Well, that would be the argument that all of this lack of volatility is a sign of a well-priced, efficient market.
The problem with that is that only lasts until it does, because once people become a little complacent, anything can happen. The VIX, which is called the fear gauge, really only goes back to the early 1990s. So it's hard to tell, you know, whether volatility is too high or too low. It's hard to say.
I think some of this has to do with people drifting into index funds. You know, you buy the whole S&P 500, set it and forget it, and that doesn't necessarily prompt you to be worrying about your individual stocks each day.
Yeah, I think that could have something to do with it. But I think maybe it's a sign that investors are coming better informed, where they realize that they don't need to do as much changing and moving around in their portfolios as they once did. because a lot of that can just lead to harm most of the time. So if that's the case, I think that's actually a positive sign, but it's, I guess we'll be able to tell next time a downturn happens.
Just makes it hard to be a stockbroker. I mean, you chose a slightly different path, Ben, but stockbrokers make more money when people are calling constantly to buy and sell.
That's one of the reasons it's kind of a dying breed. They had a story in the Wall Street Journal last week about how a lot of stockbrokers are going for the more financial advisor route, where they recommend a sort of long-term policy allocation and stick with it instead of constantly offering new suggestions to people's portfolios. Which, again, I think probably has a lot to do with this, the fact that they're not looking for hot stock tips. They're more concerned with asset allocation and things like broad mutual funds and index funds. So I think it's a net positive. It's just kind of hard to tell what some of the unintended consequences could be the next time something bad happens.
Yeah, when the assumptions shift, which they will do. Ben Carlson, Director of Institutional Asset Management at Ritholtz Wealth Management. He's also a columnist for Bloomberg. Mr. Carlson, thank you for this.
Thanks for having me.
If huge corporations can't stop cyber criminals, what's the small business person to do? The government's National Cybersecurity Alliance is holding a series of workshops for small businesses across the country now to talk about defending against data theft, online scams, and ransomware attacks. Marketplace's Mitchell Hartman went to one in Portland, Oregon.
We're on page 6 of your workbook now. Are there other breaches about to happen?
Computer security trainer Kristen Judge runs through a range of cyber threats to a conference room packed with small business people. One of them, real estate negotiator Everett Hall, says he's been targeted unsuccessfully by hackers going after his data. Now he does all his banking and title insurance work in person.
I limit my information that I put online.
Kristen Judge says major companies with big IT departments can be devastated by hacks, but hackers are also looking for smaller targets for a quick payout.
A business has a $30,000 hit. That may be it for them. They can't recover as quickly as the large guys.
Lawyer Christy Cook helps businesses and nonprofits defend against attacks and deal with the aftermath.
Setting up credit monitoring for your clients, forensic IT analysis to determine the full extent of the breach.
She says prevention, strong passwords and antivirus software, vigilance against email phishing is much cheaper. I'm Mitchell Hartman for Marketplace.
Hey, looking for work? Think you could figure out an Amazon warehouse? Foraging for talent, Amazon next week will hold job fairs in about a dozen locations around the country aimed at filling 50,000 job openings, 40,000 of them full-time, most at warehouses. Amazon hopes to build a workforce of 300,000 by next year, 10 times more than the company had 6 years ago. The largest private employer in America is Walmart, with 2.2 million people. In New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.